Coming up on Tech News Today, we've got three special guests, members of Chat Realm, members of the audience that we picked from an overwhelming group of people, amazing people out there doing stuff. We've got 3D printing, we've got subreddit creation and all kinds of data analysis and some Plex coding, all that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, December 23rd, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Isaac Turo.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And it's holiday time.
Yeah.
Which means we're totally here at work.
Totally
right?
Yeah. Here.
Yes, working hard on a Monday.
Absolutely.
Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Oh, I've got a case of the Monday.
How was your weekend?
So,
is it good?
So good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wish it was Sunday.
And, plus Christmas Eve tomorrow, and then Christmas Day, and then Boxing Day, and then New Year's Eve. So much going on. But instead of a regular Tech News Day, we are going to do our open mic show. Are you guys excited?
Very.
Woo!
Well, because it gives us a chance to be able to talk to some of the folks that are part of the Tech News Today
show every day.
And we bring them on and talk to them and find out how awesome they are.
We got some great guests to come on this time. And of course, we had way more cool people email us wanting to be on the show than we could fit. We can only fit three people in. So apologies to you who didn't make it. I'm so sorry. But please welcome our first guest, Mr. Scott Theed, am I saying your last name right, Scott?
No, it's TD, just like in letters of the alphabet.
A touchdown.
Two letters of the alphabet.
To remember, because TD Enterprises is his handle on the subreddit, which you created.
Yes, I originally created it and then promptly sat in the background and watched other people make it awesome.
Like a good creator, you set it in motion and it was so perfect you didn't have to touch it again.
Yeah, that's basically it.
So if you go to technewstoday.reddit.com, TD Enterprises is the guy who made it happen. So we were talking about this a little bit before the show. Tell us about why you did it, because I'm incredibly thankful that you did.
It dates back to one day before the show watching the live stream. I used to actually never be able to watch live just from where I worked. And just happened to have a day off and watched you guys creating the show, and you were asking people for link submissions and stuff. And I just learned about the whole subreddit being able to create your own. So it was, well, I'll make one, call it Tech News Today and send the password and all that to Tom. And then you kind of publicized it on the show a week later, and then it kind of grew into this 20,978 readers that it currently has, which is insane.
Yeah, I know. I remember when it got over 1,000 the first time. I was super excited, and it's just gotten out of hand, and it's invaluable in taking the temperature of at least that part of the audience. That's a big section of the audience, and what they're thinking is important. So big thanks for doing that, man.
Mm-hmm. And it's big thanks to like Jacob Miller, Clyde, Tom Durkee, and Roll Mulls, who we've also have as moderators. So usually there, I open up the mod queue subreddit pane that I've got, and there's nothing to do because Clyde's or someone else has already done it. So
they're so good. They are absolutely good. And I always called him Kildee, so it's Clyde. I think I've been told.
I don't know. I've never talked to him. So
all right. Well, whatever his name is, he does an awesome job. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into technology? Why are you interested in technology? Lay it on us.
Well, I'm an engineer by training, so I've always loved building things. I was a big Lego kid, and then computers took over from there when I got older. And then podcasting, really. I jumped on the podcasting bandwagon in 2005 when iTunes released it, and I was big in high school before that, doing the I guess when like the first iMovie came out, I got big into that, and so I've always had this kind of soft spot for media, like maybe not professionally made media, but I really appreciate the back end of how do you produce the show, how do you make the show. I used to do light and sound production from the back. I would be the guy on the control board making it look good, making other people look good. And so I now, dealing with technology at work and other places, it's mostly using technology to get my job done more efficiently and stuff like that. So,
Scott, you joined a very very inclusive club. Tom did butcher your name. He used to call me Liaz from the chat room and then Eaz from the chat room. So got TD wrong. So congratulations on that. And as you are somebody who did lighting and stuff, I noticed your video looks fantastic. How long did it take you to set up for this, your home studio? Do you normally have lights like this? Because it's really, really good.
I have a desk light tilted up at my face. That's it.
See? Cool. So you're as blind as I am. If you should see the lights that I stare at every single day and then have to concentrate on these little monitors in front of me. It's next.
Yeah,
to
I keep looking for the little green dot on the iMac. Where is it? There it is. So.
Awesome.
But.
Well, yeah, I just want to know anything else about how you use tech news. Like, what is it that makes tech news in particular or something that you want to keep up on? What do you like? What do you dislike? All of that sort of thing.
I just like keeping up with it I started as a Mac head. When I started playing, with digital video, I was a PC guy. I despised iMacs. And I remember walking into the room, there was an old G4 tower, old iMacs, and just kind of laughing at these other people doing this video stuff. And then from there it was, wait a minute, you can do a lot of cool stuff. And so then as I got older, it really was just, I branched out from kind of following the Mac. I was one of those, I would call pre-iPod Halo converts. So I swapped in like 04, and then the Halo really started after that. And so I just kept up with it from there. And I'm really interested in I work for the municipality here. So we have a bunch of data, but it is kind of interesting to see just how data can be used to make things better and make more efficient. So I do like hearing these stories where big data can be used for good and can make systems either better or more useful. That's one of my big, just fun things to have. I also like being the guy that anyone can ask a question to, and normally I know the answer when it comes to technology. So
Scott, how are you going to handle all of the tweets you're going to get saying, you love Macs, you don't like computers, because it's likely to happen?
Well, I use both. That's a
smart move right there.
I still use Windows XP at work even. So
sorry.
Yeah. I have actually never really used Windows 7 or Windows 8 actually. That's how stratified I am. So we use Linux on some terminals at work too. So having learned some of the back end stuff for OS X way back in the day for a computer science class, it's helped me out immense. Taking that one C plus programming class has really helped me out just understand how it works.
So you sound like you're pretty well-rounded as far as tech news goes. You play around a lot of different operating systems, gadgets. You listen to what's going on. What do you think is the most, I don't know, overblown story of this year? Or the story that you're just like, you know, I've had enough of this. I hate hearing about it. Is there something that stands out to you like that?
In the microcosm that is technology, I really don't care who the next Microsoft CEO is. Like, I understand why that's a big deal. Microsoft's a huge company. But I just don't think it will. I really don't think it'll matter who it is, because maybe if it does turn into separating the company out, but I don't see that happening, because they've got such a large install base. They will always be, unless something drastic happens, they will be the software that runs 80% of the computers in the world. And so I totally see where they're trying to get better with phones and all that, but I still, it's Office and Windows in my mind. But then again, I'm an engineer. I have to use Office and Windows. I love Excel. I love pivot tables. So
you just warmed the hearts of millions of chat room members out there by saying the word pivot tables. I'm not even kidding.
I know. I feel like I understand what Scott means, though. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know it matters who the next CEO is, but But it's a big company. Things don't move. You know, they don't turn on a dime for a company like Microsoft.
You're plenty nimble. I'm sure Mary Jo Foley would have something to say about this. But since you're our guest, Scott.
Plenty nimble. Sure. I don't know.
They backtracked like crazy this year. They said they were going to do
that. That's not being nimble. That's nimble. That's backtracking.
That's still being nimble. It's hard to backtrack when you've got
inertia.
Does
one need to be nimble to backtrack? I think that's what Ayaz is implying.
This is the question for the ages, my friends.
All right. Well, Scott, before we let you go, any questions for us that you'd like to ask for Elias or Jocelyn or Sarah?
My question is, what have you guys used to replace Google Reader?
Ah, good question. Personally, I'm a Feedly guy now, and sure. I paid for the lifetime membership when they offered it briefly, right around the time of the transition. And I'm really enjoying it. I tried several different others, and there's a lot of good ones out there, but that's the one I've gone with.
I use Feedly as well. Dig Reader is another one, but I felt like Feedly came on the scene right at the right time. It was sort of like Google Reader's going away, and I love RSS. So, yeah, I switched over to Feedly on Flipboard, which is how I read a lot of my feeds, actually, visually. It was a no-brainer. It was a seamless sort of back-end process. I didn't have to do anything, so...
Yeah,
it really hasn't changed anything for me.
Flipboard's become like my number one... reader, basically, because I like the visual presentation. I like not knowing what's been written about hundreds of times, because it always would populate in RSS feeds that way for me. I end up using Feedly as when I only have an actual PC, so I'm usually on my tablet with Flipboard or my phone. So right now, Flipboard's my RSS replacement, which is a strange thing.
And I don't use RSS anymore at all, but I didn't really use Reader. Twitter, and strangely, we had a conversation about this in an earlier episode. A clip of it is going to be in tomorrow's Best Of, because it was a really good kind of comparison between how we all use Twitter. But that's my main news source. I use Twitter as if it were a feed reader, because it's quick and easy to scan through really quickly and go, okay, this theme keeps coming up. Apparently, that's a big story right now, so I'm going to dig in and find more.
There you go. Well, thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Very quickly,
we'll
say goodbye.
Thank you very much. Have a good Christmas and holiday season.
You too. And you can follow Scott on Twitter at TD Enterprises if you like. Well, let's bring in Cynthia, the digital fabricator. Her website is called It's a Sin. She is a 3D printer owner and advocate, which is one of the reasons her email caught our eye. Is Cynthia Mavros? Is that how you say it?
Correct.
Oh, good. I guessed that one right. Thank goodness. So tell us a little bit about the 3D printing and fabricating you do. I know you're an artist beyond just that, but we're really interested in those models you were printing.
Well, I'm a software engineer, actually, by trade. And the company I was working for in the United States in 2001 was closing down, so I moved to Europe and started doing some software work in a few different countries in Europe. And then I got laid off in the Netherlands. So the MIT has a How to Make Almost Anything class that is worldwide, the Fab Academy. So I took that, and that's when I learned about laser cutting, 3D printing, electronics. It's a six-month course, everything you need ever want to know about digital fabrication.
What kind of printers do you have?
I have a Form 1. Are you familiar with that? It was a Kickstarter.
Heard of it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a Kickstarter project by a group out of MIT. It's a resin printer. And I also have a Felix filament printer. It was developed by an engineer in the Netherlands.
Now, do you ever use them in series on a single project, because we were watching today on the randomizer, or I mean last week on the randomizer, about the speaker that was printed all in one piece.
Actually, I just got the resin printer this summer, and my filament printer actually is right now in the Netherlands, so I haven't been able to use them together, but I've done things on the filament, printing on fabrics and doing things more dimensionally that way. But the resin printer, no, I haven't used it with the film. I've used the filament printer also to do some prototyping, because the resin has a much higher degree of accuracy.
Well, you've got some great models. We were showing some of them up on the screen there. What kinds of things do you like to print the most? Is it more the fun, arty stuff or the useful stuff? It looks like you've got some great art.
Well, I started on the filament printer when I was at the Fab Academy printing. My partner, he bought an old O-scope, and all the feet on the O-scope were all corroded. So printing feet for the O-scope. Or different parts we needed around the apartment. So I like to do them all. I use Rhino 3D to draw everything in, and then it just changes into G. You change it into G codes, and it goes into the 3D printer.
And I'm assuming you because you have a shop up there that you sell these. Is that right?
Yeah, I sell. I do a lot of. Fiber sculptures and also the 3D. The 3D, I've also done did casts from things I've printed, and I'm trying to perfect the molding process so I can sell those with a quality product.
Cynthia, when 3D printers came out, I was super excited, but to somehow take your ideas and get them into a form that can be printed out, how much of a struggle is that? Because it seems like it's one thing to just imagine something. How do you go about taking that idea and putting it through a printer?
It's not really, well, to me, it's not that hard at all because I've always been a maker. While I was going to university, I even worked as a metal machinist. So I'm used to looking at 3D drawings and turning them into a 1D drawing and turning it into a 3D object. And I've done a little drawing for animation. So also those characters you had to draw in 3D. So you just have to practice. One of my first classes, the instructor said, get an IKEA catalog and draw the chairs. Because all the dimensions are there. So you can, you have the scale and you it's the best practice.
That's really cool. I didn't even think about that. So did you make lots of miniature furniture then?
No, that was the animation course.
That was just for the animation. You never turned it into printing.
No, I didn't get into furniture. There's some people, though, on Thingiverse that sell give away some really nice designs of furniture.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. You're somebody who's in there using this regularly and knowing how it works. From where you sit, what do you think will be the practical widespread use of 3D printers? What will be that Macintosh moment for 3D printers, if you had to guess?
This weekend I had a show at a university here, and all the young kids that talked to me about 3D printing, they were using them with their school projects. They'd have to write a report, but then they wanted some kind of imagery to go with it. And they didn't think the sky's the limit. They didn't think they would have any trouble creating this 3D idea to go with their projects. So there's all sorts of ideas out there. That's sort of like saying when somebody has a lathe or a mill, what do you think is going to be the best thing to build out of it?
Right. What kind of buildings are people going to make in the future? Yeah, I'm very excited to see to watch 3D printing grow and continue to take off. I think you're absolutely right. It can go in so many different directions, and it may go in all of those directions and more we haven't even imagined. So it's really exciting. Hey, well, before we let you, oh, go ahead.
In Chicago, their library put in a big fab area where they have printers and laser cutters and all sorts of digital equipment. So they're making it accessible to the masses. And that's the whole idea also about the Fab Academy, to share the idea, to teach other people about this new technology.
Well, before we let you go, any questions you have for any of the four of us?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It's okay.
No problem. Itsacyn.net, ITSACYN.net, if you want to check out Cynthia's work. Anything else do you want to let people know before we let you go?
No, you have a wonderful show. I'm sorry to hear that you're leaving, Tom.
Well, thank you, Cynthia. Appreciate that. And thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today. It's really good. Really cool. Good
yeah, stuff. Really cool. Very interesting stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Keep
Cynthia.
Up the great work. All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our sponsor for today's show, ProXPN, a global virtual private network. What is that, you ask? Well, I'm glad you asked, because you need it, especially if you're out and about using open Wi-Fi. VPN has a 512-bit encryption tunnel, and ProXPN works by OpenVPN so that you don't have your data out there where anybody can sniff it. You can use that airport Wi-Fi, you can use that hotel Wi-Fi, you can use that coffee shop Wi-Fi, and not have to worry as much about who's going to see what you're doing. Also, don't have to worry about ISP seeing what you're doing, or whoever's spying on the ISP seeing what you're doing. Can bypass geographical restrictions. And there's a ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. World-class customer support. Steve Gibson gave it a great review on Security Now. So go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer. Use the code TNT to receive 20% off for the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. So go to proxpn.com/twit, sign up with the code TNT. ProXPN accepts payments through Visa, PayPal, and now Bitcoin as well. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. All right, let's bring in our third listener, Tobias. How do you say your last name, Tobias?
It's Jetta, but it's not. It doesn't matter. It's Finnish, so you can forget about it.
Tobias Jetta. Is that close?
Finnish and forget it.
Yeah, it's actually Tobias as well, if we're going to be really
Jetta. Picky. All right. Senior software engineer at Plex. We talk about Plex all the time, both on TNT and Framerate. So happy to have you in the audience here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, as I said, I'm a senior developer at Plex. I do mostly the Plex Home Theater application and also most of the Linux development. That's kind of what I do. I've been a programmer for a long while. Actually, I switched to programming after I've been a project manager. Most people go the other way around, but I thought it was so boring to just manage projects. So I wanted to do something creative. So I got back into programming and joined Plex. And that's 2.5 years ago now. And it's been a fun ride.
How did you start to get into programming or get back into programming when you started on Plex?
Well, I always had programming as a hobby. Like, that's what you do when I thought that I had to have some kind of creative output. So that's what I did on my spare time, doing open source coding and stuff like that. So I've always had it there. And so I started to help out with the Linux port to Plex, actually. That's how I got in contact with the guys over there. And before I knew it, they offered to hire me on as a developer.
What was the, and that brings up an interesting question. What was the first bit of programming you got into, or the first open source project that you worked on?
I mean, the biggest open source project I programmed on, and one of the first was XMS. I was one of the lead developers for that for a while. So that was the Winamp clone for Linux. So I ran that project for a while, and that's been kind of one of the things that I've done on the side for a long time. And not anymore, but many years ago.
So what parts go ahead, Ayas.
And what parts of Plex can we thank you for? Because I've been using Plex like nonstop for several years. It's ridiculously powerful. It's free. And we talked about it on KnowHow a bunch of times. What should I be personally thanking you for? Because I use every part of Plex.
Yeah, I want to start to say that everything is a team effort at Plex. We are a pretty small team, and we have a lot of different products, and we collaborate all through the different projects. That said, I think that if you want to peg something on me, you can say that basically everything Linux and NAS related to the media server has been things that I've been working very closely with. I've also been working on the inside with a lot of internal tools for easily building and testing and advancing the media server in terms of developer support. And then, of course, the second thing, and like the last year of my development time, has been on the Plex Home Theater 1.0. This is our HD PC client for Mac or Windows, or even third-party persons has ported it to Linux. It's based on the XBMC code base and have support for all the advanced playback features you want to have if you're a real HD PC and home theater nerd. So this is our high-end product for enthusiasts, so to speak. So that's been my main project. I've been working very hard to integrate the latest tech from XBMC and integrating all the latest technology we have in the media server into that client.
I'm curious, did you have much, if anything, to do with kind of the Chromecast implementation with Plex, and how did that go for the team?
All right. I want to start by saying that I was not directly part of the team responsible for the Chromecast integration. So I don't know all like kind of the specifics of that. But I understand that it took quite a while for us to get that out because the technology is very new. I mean, the Chromecast has not been on the market that long. The software was not super mature. And this is kind of Google's MO, I guess. They release products very early out in the public. Not everything is fully baked yet. But I think this is also the reason why Google hasn't opened the floodgates and why we haven't seen more developers jumping on the Chromecast train, because they have very early indicated they want to work very closely with a few select developers and make sure that the SDKs and the receiver on the Chromecast side is working 100% perfectly before they put it out into the App Store or to the Google Market. And I mean, we did a lot of work on our side to get the seamless playback to work. I mean, all the transcoding stuff, we had to tweak a lot to get Chromecast to work on optimal playback. We also had a lot of work to improve our remote controlling capabilities. Since the Chromecast doesn't have their own interface where you can browse, you have to do all that from our mobile clients. And while we have a very good interface on the mobile clients, we also needed to have a very good way to send that to the receiver and also control like the scrubbing, the subtitles, the volume and stuff like that. So we did a lot of work and reworked the whole protocol we have between the mobile apps and the players in how to control them basically via an API. And I must say that overall the Chromecast integration has been really great for us at Plex. I mean, we have it solves a problem that is in a very simple and easy way. I mean, you only plug this very cheap stick into your TV and instantly you can get all the content you have on your media server onto your TV. So I think it's a fantastic product, and but at the same time, it also feels like a prototyping device. It's like a very, very nice prototype that is useful. But I think that we will see in the future when Google integrates this protocol and this technology into other things, that is when it's going to be really interesting and a good alternative to the Apple AirPlay, because right now that's the standard. But it's not very open, and it's very hard for us as a third party to integrate any AirPlay functionality into our products. So it's going to be much more interesting when the Chromecast protocol and the Chromecast technology becomes the new standard. So thumbs up for the Chromecast. And I hope everyone enjoys using that functionality. I know that the developers worked very hard, basically all over the world, to get that working.
Tobias Yetta. I'm probably still not saying it right. I apologize. But senior software engineer at Plex, you can follow him on Twitter. It's TobiasHieta. And if you're interested in Plex, go check it out at plexapp.com. He's also a podcaster. Don't forget. Code Talk, which is Codsnock or something. The better pronounced in Finnish, I expect.
Getting on with the Swedish here.
There we go. We can hear you. We don't see your video, but leave it like that because I would rather.
It's a Swedish. I'm sorry.
I don't know what's happening.
Kodsnack.se also runs an App Talk Swedish podcast called Opsnack, maybe?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. All right. appsnack.libsyn.com. Thank you, Tobias.
Thank you.
Hey, that was fun, guys. Don't you think so? It's always great to get faces of the people in the audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's always good to know who's listening, and that it also just lets us know. Like when we get those emails, you're like, we do have the smartest audience out there, so it's great. Yeah. To see
not him. Just smart, but it's like, oh gosh, like I want to talk to Cynthia more about. You know, it's like these are people who are actually literally making a lot of the products that we're so interested in. We talk about all the time, so that's incredible. I love that.
Yeah, and we cover so much depth and kind of everything in technology, you know, kind of on a surface level from the show. This is where you get to really kind of drill down and find the people that are passionate about one specific thing and all the information that they can share with you about that specific thing. I love it. I love doing these episodes.
From Scott Teedy, our subreddit originator, subreddit creator at technewstoday.reddit.com, Cynthia Mavros and Tobias Yetta. This has been a great show. Thank you guys for joining us. Don't forget, you can have a voice in what stories we cover at that subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. And of course, email us twit.tv. It's a TNT at twit.tv. Give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. And of course, visit our website, twit.tv/TNT. We will be back tomorrow with the best of 2013. All those clips we've been asking you to send us all year.
Oh, yeah.
Jason's put them together. You're going to love it. See you then.